Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg and Carl Carlson. Welcome. Glad you could join me.
Welcome, Fred.
All right. You know, it's been a little while since we talked, but last time we talked, we went into this concept of, well, when do you use different tools? And you related the story, I think a couple of times in different episodes and different situations where your first reliability plan was you found every single tool you could imagine and dig up from any reference and dumped it all into one plan. And, you know, kind of learned the hard way that that's not appropriate or useful. And there is that concept, though, that the variety of different tools we have different, each of them has a specific purpose and where they're best used. And even though they can be used in many different spots, it's not like a recipe, always do reliability modeling at 3 days into the project and always do accelerated testing at day 75. It never works that way.
Yeah, that's right, Fred. It's very, very specific to the company, the client, the product, the usage of the product, very specific. And I would say, just to start at 30,000 feet, that reliability engineering and management for me is a lifelong learning process. You never quite get 100% there. You're always learning.
Does that mean you're still making mistakes?
Yes, to some degree, sure. but one of the things I've learned, just to key off of that phrase, is it's so important to understand the vital few tools are what is most important in a given reliability plan. In other words, to understand the most important tools for the circumstances, the unique circumstances that you're in, and to enable and support and bring about the accomplishment of those tools in the reliability planning process. And so that selection of tools becomes very important, because we don't want to use every tool. That wouldn't make any sense. You'd end up watering down the effort, and then the vital tools that are needed would not get implemented.
And I've seen that where there's a long list of things that worked for the team in the past over the last, say, 10 years. And so each project just repeats what they did before. And if they learned anything the hard way, they add another test or they add another technique. And then it becomes just a checklist.
It becomes a checklist. And 785, the MIL standard on reliability program planning, had a form of checklist. In other words, it had some tools, but it always said, I mean, it said in there very clearly that you're to select the tools. You're not just to use it automatically. In other words, you can tailor it, was the word they used. And most people miss that. A lot of people miss that nuance.
Yeah, and it's not a nuance. It says it in black and white right up front. You know, it's the same with the MIL Handbook 217. It says not to be used to predict field performance.
Yes,
and it says it right in, I think, section 3, black and white. But let me give you an example though. Let's dive into a specific tool and put in some details into when and why would you use this tool. So fault tree analysis is a tool that I'm familiar with, I've seen and have written about, but I've rarely have ever used it. So do you have more experience with that, or when would you use that?
Yeah, I've had a fair bit of experience. But first fault tree analysis I did was at General Motors. We were considering many years ago, the use of electric rear brakes. And that was a departure, of course, because brakes were always hydraulic and it had, you know, the tubes and the connectors and everything was mechanical. And understandably, we had to be cautious about shifting over into a new technology.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did a fault tree analysis on electric rear brakes because to be sure that the unwanted event, which is lack of brakes, did not happen. And at that time, based on the fault tree, we decided more work was needed to launch. Of course, now it's much more standard technology. But that was years ago. The fault tree begins with an unwanted event. My colleague, Dev Rahija, we brought him into General Motors years ago, and he taught fault tree analysis to a group of us. That was one of my first intellectual introductions, and then I've read considerable amounts. I've done, I'm going to say, a couple dozen fault trees. I've consulted on fault tree projects with many companies, and I've researched it thoroughly for chapter 14 of my book on failure mode effects analysis, because fault tree has a relationship with FMEA.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not the same, and they're used in different circumstances. So let me just cover very briefly in my opinion as to what the usage of fault tree is. It's a unique circumstance where you want to benefit from three things. One is a graphical representation. So you have fault tree is very visual. Some other tools are not as visual, but fault tree, you're making a graphical representation of the complex relationships in a system that lead to the unwanted event.
Right.
The second part of fault tree is considering the interactions between unwanted events and multiple contributors. So you have lots of contributions coming into a fault tree, and where, to use the language of fault tree, where you have AND gates, certain contributions mm-hmm. happen along with other contributions, then fault tree becomes a very useful tool, because FMEA, for example, is a bunch of OR gates, and a lot of other analyses are OR gates. Where you get into AND gates, of course, is system reliability modeling,
right,
or reliability block diagrams, and fault tree mathematically is almost identical, very similar to system reliability modeling. So you have those. Go ahead.
I was going to say is that at one time, I think it was RELX, had a tool that would convert a block diagram to a fault tree and vice versa.
Yes, and RelaxSoft has the same thing. They are very similar in their math, and if you have a good system reliability model, it becomes easier to do a fault tree. You have to consider the unwanted event. In other words, system reliability modeling has a different objective, of course.
Right.
And
right.
Fault tree, you're trying to say what are the contributions, contributors to an unwanted event, whereas system reliability modeling says what's the overall reliability of the system. So they have different objectives.
Well, doesn't the fault tree, focusing on an unwanted event, like the lack of braking power in this new brake system, isn't it one of the outputs? Not only what are the contributors and what are all the paths that would lead to failure of the brake system, but it also includes the potential to create a probability of brake failure.
Yes, and that's the third one I was going to mention.
Okay.
You have the capability of bringing in the probabilities for each of the contributors. So once you have it treed out graphically, then you can insert the probability or the failure rates of the different contributors, going all the way down to causes potentially, and then tree them up mm-hmm. Through the AND gates, OR gates, and partial gates, and all the different types of gates. You can tree them up to get the probability of the unwanted event. You don't get that probability of the unwanted event in FMEA other than occurrence ranking, which is a different subject
than
fault tree.
So fault tree, you've outlined basically that it's, as the example you gave, is that it's a new technology. Is we have uncertainty as to how this will not work, how this unwanted event will occur. There's also the corollary to the success tree analysis. So we could say, what's the likelihood that this will work, that will stop the vehicle, is a mirror of it. But that's one use of it. I've heard of other uses for fault tree, like in doing failure analysis as a tool to explore how do we evaluate what the root cause was?
Well, yes, you could evaluate a root cause. The root cause would be not the... normally, you don't start with a root cause as an unwanted event. You really start with one of two things, either more like a failure mode, because then you're treating out all the different ways that failure mode could occur.
Right.
Or in FMEA language, it could be an effect, like you could have a thermal event or some other type of event that would be the effect of failure, and you don't want that to happen, and there's multiple ways that it could happen, then you can tree that out.
Right. Well, what I'm thinking of, Carl, is the idea that you have a failure mode. A customer reports or you see in a prototype a failure mode that you either didn't expect or were unaware of prior, and so it doesn't work. And you're like, well, before we start jumping to solutions, which is not a good failure analysis technique, but there's also 20 different ways that this could occur. And so a fault tree is a great way to, in my mind, a great way to break out and tree is the word you're using. What are the potential ways to do it? And then we can systematically go into the lab and eliminate for our particular circumstance, which ones did occur and which ones did not occur. We don't really need the probabilities at that time. It would help. So we know we could look for the most likely thing first, but it's a way to organize the approach to an adjunct to fault, to root cause analysis.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's a, that is a very good usage of it. I particularly, and I'll characterize that as during product development, typically doesn't have to be, but it's that's the usual in that circumstance where you're developing some new technology, new approach, new product, and you have a complex relationship or failure mode you don't want to have happen that has a complex contributors. And fault tree is a great tool to zero in on that particular failure mode you don't want to have happen or that consequence and understand it, like you say, get to the root causes. And make sure you design out those root causes so that the product will not have that unwanted event, or at least it'll be a low probability.
So what other ways, when else would you use one of these? It doesn't sound like something we do all the time.
No, it isn't. I've used it. I've seen companies use it in, let me say it that way. I've seen companies use it often in conjunction with an FMEA. And so you have, you're going along with an FMEA, and then you come across a particular failure mode that has those criteria that we talked about. So the point there is, it oftentimes the fault tree analysis project will be initiated in an FMEA as a recommended action. Recommended action, fault tree analysis on XYZ. Or the team just goes ahead and does it, and it's, I'll call it a it's a associated method or associated task along with an FMEA. So I've seen it used often that way.
But it would be, the FMEA would say, here's a safety issue or a high severity or has a lot of uncertainty as to, here's a failure mode, but it has many branches that could lead to the that failure mode occurring. Is, would it be that kind of scenario where you would, because if an FMEA says this capacitor could fail, it's open, short, or intermittent. It's about all it can do. There's not, it's a very, very basic fault tree.
That's correct. The I think the key on where to shift to a fault tree if you're doing an FMEA is to realize that an FMEA is usually, not always, but usually a series of OR gates.
Right.
This failure mode happens, or this failure mode, or this cause, or this cause. It doesn't do anything to integrate those in a mathematical way.
Right.
The occurrence ranking is just identified for each failure mode slash cause.
Well, FMEA also gets complicated when it's two or three situations have to occur, two or three events have to occur.
Exactly.
Switches in the wrong place, user pushes the wrong button, and something else happens, and then you get a catastrophic failure.
So where I hear that progression, to use that word, the progression of a certain series of events, my mind is thinking potentially faltering.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm doing an FMEA or we're in product development, we're saying, gosh, we better be very concerned if A and B and C leading to D happens, then I'm thinking that might be a good usage of faltering. We don't want D to happen, and it happens if A and B and C occur. So let's tree that out. And years ago, we would do it mathematically on paper.
Right.
And it's much, much easier now to shift over into software that integrates reliability-wise. In its simplest form, of course, it's the integration of AND gates and OR gates. But Faultree has many other types of gates that can come into play.
That's right. Yeah, all of the electrical engineering language of NOR gates and AND gates and NAND gates and just the takes me back to when I first got involved with electrical engineering as I started using TTL logic, which was discrete components that were an individual gate. Now we have tens of millions of gates on our wrists sometimes, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and Faultree has unique definitions, like there's an inhibit gate. The output fault occurs if all the input events occur and an additional event occurs. So there's a priority gate, which a priority AND gate output fault occurs if all the input events occur. I'm just looking at the definitions here.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole set. There's a voting OR gate that allows a certain number of input events to occur where in essence it's analogous to a voting.
That's right. If two of the three are set one way, then it wins and off it goes. I wrote a short tutorial for the CRE prep series of articles, I think a month or 2 months ago, that listed a bunch of the different gates and definitions for Faultree. So we should link up that article to show the graphical symbols and the definitions.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. An interesting side conversation is, because I didn't think about it until I wrote chapter 14 of the book. I probably did think about it, but I didn't think about it in a thorough way, the difference between fault and failure.
Yeah. Was that come back to when you would use a fault tree analysis? Because I get it confused, and I know the word often gets confused as failure and fault being equivalent. And that's where I think it gets I associate it with failure analysis.
Yeah, and I'll just, now I'm going to shift. I just pulled up the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission Faultree Handbook.
Okay.
Which, let me just read a portion of it. This is a quote. "We first make the distinction between the rather specific word failure and the more general word fault. Consider a relay. If the relay closes properly when a voltage is impressed across its terminals, we call this relay success. If, however, the relay fails to close under these circumstances, we call this a failure."
Okay.
Another possibility is the relay closes at the wrong time. This is due to improper functioning of some upstream component. This is clearly not a relay failure. However, untimely relay operation may well cause the entire circuit to enter unsatisfactory state. We call an occurrence like this a fault. So in the standard that's Faultree handbook by the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory, they do make a distinction between the two in terms of fault and failure. Just a kind of an intellectual differentiation.
Well, they're similar in my mind.
Yes, they are similar.
Similar, but the fault doesn't assign blame. It's just something's not right.
Yes.
And it could have... And I was doing an FMEA a couple of years ago, and one of the guys in the room said, "Oh, when we're looking at a particular subsystem of the part," he said, "this is kind of a weak part of the system, and it may be the victim of something else failing."
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "Or it could be the hero. It could take the brunt of the damage because it's easy to repair and it doesn't cascade failure. So he called that a hero. He said like a fuse. A fuse sacrifices itself to save the rest of the system. And this is a whole nother conversation with this, the way that he described these different ways components take the damage, for example.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. That's a good story. What some people don't realize in an FMEA is that we're looking for, on a design FMEA, we're looking for a design deficiency as the cause, because you could have, you could potentially say, you know, a meteor striking could damage, could, you know, the part would not work, but that's not a design deficiency because we're not really designing the part to be meteor proof.
That's right.
And so, so a lot, it's very important to, on an FMEA, I always teach that on a design FMEA, look for a design deficiency, and on a process FMEA, look for a manufacturing deficiency. And fault tree tends to go higher level, higher order events. Here you could take in, you could conceivably, although I probably wouldn't, but you could conceivably have the meteor strike somewhere in that fault tree logic.
Right. And the probabilities would pretty much put it into insignificant digits.
But exactly.
The idea, though, is that you could look at common cause failures.
Yes.
Like a vehicle accident could take out multiple systems of a vehicle all at once, whereas a brake wearing out is a completely different path to a brake failure.
Yes. Yeah, so just kind of bringing it around then is there are unique circumstances on a fault tree where if you have an unwanted event that has complex contributors, particularly where two or more things occur in tandem, then it becomes useful to model it with fault tree analysis in order to understand all the contributions, as you said earlier, so that you can design them out, and also to be able to properly model the overall probability of failure, probability of that unwanted event.
Right.
So where you have those circumstances, particularly during product development, where you are wanting to ensure the product does not have a particular unwanted event, then fault tree analysis becomes a useful tool.
Well, I think that's a perfect summary. So let's wrap it up there.
Okay.
So, I mean, as a listener and to the show, which we really appreciate. And I mean, if you've got experience with fault tree in a different way that it could be used or just reinforce the concepts we brought up here that Carl's mentioned and I mentioned, let us know. Go over to reliability.fm and you can find the Speaking of Reliability show in this particular episode. And let us know what you think and add some discussion to it. Or better yet, send us a question of if there's a tool in the toolbox that you're curious about, when's the best time to use it, or are you using it correctly in your program? Let us know. Give us some information, and we'll certainly come back around and talk about that. We really appreciate hearing from you. So with that, Carl, I think that's a wrap-up for fault tree analysis today. And actually, nothing failed in our complex system of communication here.
Not yet.
There's always a chance.
All right, thanks, Fred.
All right, thanks, Carl. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.